Good morning. I just tweeted about the background noise, which I actually don't think is going to come through on this video because this microphone here is actually really good at keeping stuff out. But if you have a look at the photo I just tweeted, where's my phone? You will see my poolside is it's rather muddy. So one of the joys of having a nice garden is there's a lot of tree roots. And apparently what happens is that, let me take a step back. It turns out that not all gardeners are as professional as everyone else. Now, fortunately, in this industry, we don't have this problem, do we? But you know how it's almost like your brother's aunt's dog's next door neighbor can write you some software. I think some of the people that put the trees in this place a few years ago might have been that caliber of gardener. And they've ended up putting trees that are way too big for the space. And then the roots grow out and the roots grow like under the tiles. And then the risk you have there is that they grow sort of up and then the tiles crack and then the house cracks and it's all just like disaster. So what we had to do is get around these guys that have, they've got a big truck out there with a big water container on the back and high pressure hoses. Not like the kind you clean your car or your driveway with, but the kind that like you could chop an arm off with, because they literally have enough pressure in the water to slice the roots. So that means everything's a mess and there's a little bit of background noise, but I think we should be okay. So with that, let's get on with things, starting with the sponsor this week. Sponsor this week is a brand new sponsor. It is Springboard. Springboard does a whole bunch of cybersecurity learning stuff to get you on track with the cybersecurity career. Now, their sponsor message this week is about their boot camp and a proven job guarantee. So if you're interested in going through a boot camp to learn the cyber and have a job guarantee at the end of it, which might be a good thing at the moment for some people, particularly those stuck at home and having to do everything from home, that might be a good place to start. Now, also on Springboard a couple of days ago, I tweeted that they were looking for mentors as well as part of the program. So if you're perhaps at the other end of that cycle of the cyber career and you want to get involved with mentoring some other people as well, check out that tweet from a little bit earlier on. I'll chuck that into the notes from this week's update as well. So big thanks to Springboard, first new sponsor of 2021. Okay, now on to other things. And of course, we are live at the moment. I do have some comments in here. Two questions from Burton. Why don't you allow admin at domain verification on Haveabeen Pwn? Because I've never needed to. I think there's four different aliases. Every alias I add increases the risk that someone is on a domain and has access to that address, but is not really in a position where they should control the domain. And just to be clear for everyone, what Burton's talking about here is these are email address aliases that can be used to confirm that you control a domain before you do a domain search. So it says on Haveabeen Pwn, if you want to search acme.com, then one of the means of verification is I can send an email address to one of, I think, about four different aliases at acme.com. And if you can receive it there, then you can run the search. And these are aliases that are generally used by people who control the address. Now, the risk is that for one of those, if there is a domain somewhere where someone has that alias, but they're not really someone who's responsible for the domain, then they could do a search and get information that they probably shouldn't have access to. So to be honest, Burton, I'm pretty sure you're the first person that has asked that, and I haven't had another request. Try one of the other four aliases, and then there are other means of verification as well. There's file upload, there's adding a meta tag, there's DNS entry. So someone should be able to do something with one of those. Two, do you have any news on open sourcing Haveabeen Pwn? Yes, it's hard. It's hard for a bunch of reasons. There is a very specific use case for a very specific part of it, which I've literally been having meetings and emails on this week. It will make more sense when I can explain why it was hard, but I have to get certain things approved and signed off on before I can actually talk about where we're at with that. So it is happening. Obviously, things slowed down a little bit over Christmas in part because it's Christmas, everything slows down. Also in part because I went on my massive driving holiday and I just tried not to do that stuff for a while. So there's that. And thanks to the other folks joining in here as well. Some from Sydney, some from Copenhagen, very different corners of the world there. Now, a few things this week. The static image that I used before going live with this video. So, you know, when you start one of these live streams, it's, put an image on the video just taken by the camera. I was surrounded by these guys here. Now, these, for the folks just listening, are Shelly Ones. And if I pop one of these open, I have talked about these many times before. These are IoT relays, and they're marketed as being the same size as two Oreo biscuits. If you're in America, that's a cookie. And they're very, very small, so I can fit that literally in the palm of my hand. Now, because it's so small, I can fit it behind switches on the wall, such as light switches. And as some of you will recall, I've been doing a whole bunch of home automation, which has been using a combination of these and things like the RGB LED downlights, which are above me just here. I noticed someone in my Twitter feed this morning saying they were, I think he said pot lights. So apparently maybe in the US they're called pot lights. Anyway, they're downlights here. And the reason we call them downlights is because the light goes down. We're very simple in Australia. So I've got a bunch more of those as well. And what I've been doing is just gradually doing bits of the house. And the reason, or the catalyst for getting a bunch more of these, is that we've been spending a bit of time with a couple of the neighbors over the other side of the canal here. So in the Gold Coast, a lot of the time you have a street on one side where you drive your car, and then you have a canal on the other side where you drive your boat. So anyway, we're over there and we're looking back at our house going, more RGB would be nice. All right. I was looking back at it going, more RGB would be nice. That sort of got me down that path again of just ordering a whole bunch more lights and putting them in place and starting to tie more stuff into the Shelly's. Now, because it's Australia, for anything which is anything more complex than changing a light bulb, you have to have a licensed electrician. So I've got to get my Sparky back out to do these. But I did have a bit of a breakthrough this week with a couple of things with my IoT setup, which is making my life a lot easier. One of them was I've got a whole bunch of Philips Hue lights. So I've got the Hue Goes. There's two on the desk here. There's another one downstairs. It's a Philips Hue light strip under here. Philips Hue light strips behind my TV near the fireplace, behind a mirror, so it makes a nice glow. And the thing with Philips Hue is that you can have the Philips Hue hub and you compare to the hub, which is fine. So, you know, then you use the Philips Hue app and you control things and turn them on and off. And then you've got one hub that for me sat in the server cabinet, in the cupboard, in the garage, in the bottom of the house. You can see where this is going to start to go. And things would communicate through all the walls and wires and reinforcing things into there. So you can do that. But all the Philips Hue are Zigbee based as well. So you don't have to join them to the Philips Hue hub. You can join them to a Zigbee network. So for Home Assistant, I have a Conbee 2 USB stick and then I run Decons. And that controls everything from all of the little temp sensors I got to the motion sensors to the IoT buttons. So I was finding that the Philips Hue was just very often inaccessible. Like I'd go into Home Assistant and I'd see, in fact, I ended up trying to track this. So I just made a card on the front page and I went, all right, let's just list all the Hue things. And a bunch of them just weren't accessible. So I unjoined all of them yesterday, all the remaining ones from Hue, joined them onto Decon so they're on the same Zigbee network, which of course Zigbee creates a Zigbee mesh. So every powered Zigbee unit can act as a repeater. So now I've just got like Zigbee all over the house. And eventually just end up taking the Philips Hue hub out of the server cabinet just this morning. So that is now not used at all. So much more reliable there. And in fact, if I look at my Home Assistant now, and I've got a little page here, which has all of my lights and everything is off at the moment, but everything is accessible. So problem number one solved. Problem number two, and this almost feels like the canonical example of the problem with automating things in the home. Problem number two is that when you start putting things like this on switches, if it's a dumb light and a dumb switch, so i.e. just basic circuits the same as we've had for more than a century now, then what you can do is you can sit this behind the switch. And this can emulate a switch push, but it can do it digitally. And in fact, I set these up as, what's the right word now? I set them up as the thing which allows them, I'm looking at my Shelly app here because it's got the right nomenclature, I set them up, which allowed every time you toggled the switch, either way, didn't matter if it was up or down, it would change the state of the light. And then, of course, you can either turn that switch on or off digitally as well. So I set them up as edge switches. That's the term that I was after. Toggle switches. Toggle switch. I'm looking at the wrong thing here because this is my garage. If I was to pick, let's say, the backyard pool lights. So they are edge switches. So they're all edge switches, which means that any change of state on the switch, whether it's up or down, changes the state of the light, no problems. Now, where things get really, really messed up is what happens when you have one of these behind your light switch, and then you've got an IoT light, say in the roof, it's a down light. I've seen your comments, God, it's not a light for growing pot. It's a different thing. It's sitting there in the roof. Now, the problem is that if the Shelly kills power to the circuit, your IoT light no longer has power. If it no longer has power, it is no longer addressable on the internet. It drops off. It effectively is the same as powering down your PC. So that is a bit of a problem. Now, what you can do with these, and this is what I've been going through and doing now, is you can set them up as detached switches. And a detached switch, when it toggles, either digitally or via the switch on the wall, it doesn't kill the power to the circuit. So why have it? What's the point of having a detached switch? Well, what a detached switch will do is it will raise an event. Now, when it raises an event, I can pick that up in Home Assistant and then I can do something. So for example, what I'm doing now is when you toggle a switch that has a Shelly behind it that drives an IoT light, it's a detached switch, it raises an event. I then pick that event up in Home Assistant with an automation and I look at the state of the light. If the light is off, I turn it on just within the light. This doesn't change. And then if it's on, I turn it off and vice versa and all that sort of stuff. And that works really, really well. So what it means now is, let's say one of the balconies in front of my son's room. At the moment, there is no Shelly. It's just a normal switch and IoT lights. You turn off the switch, the lights disappear altogether. They become unavailable on Home Assistant. Once I put this behind it and I make it a detached switch, and then I toggle it, all I'm going to do is turn those lights off in the light itself, and they'll still be listed here in Home Assistant as not only available but off, and then I can just turn them back on, and it will be beautiful. The one bit I still don't have a really great answer for is dimming. So you can get a Shelly which has dimming capability to sit behind in a physical dimmer so that it will pass that through if you're just changing the resistance on the line, which is the way I believe most dimmers work. The thing is, if you want to dim an IoT device, then you really need to dim it digitally. So I've got to look around at, do I have or can I find a nice looking dimming unit which can send digital commands to the IoT device? Now, of course, I can pick that up in Home Assistant and drive it from there. But if anyone has seen some really good dimming units, maybe send me a DM or something on Twitter. I'd like to see that. That'll be the next frontier. Of course, I can dim it from the phone. But as Charlotte was saying just before, she's like, well, how do we just do it on the wall? Because this is what, like, normal people understand. Now, my weather station's on the way as well. I think I mentioned the weather station the other day, so I won't go back into that. But my Davis Vantage Pro 2 is on the way as well. So then I'll be able to start getting the microclimate stuff. And the other day, and this is more a thing for us here, is I did tie in the tide charts as well. So I now have tide charts, which is good. So I can see when my boat shed is about to flood next time, which is actually a thing that happens. All right, I got a bunch of comments here, which I wanted to take a quick look at. See for Craig, Troy, what would your advice be for security teams out there who are stuck in the old world of everything must pass through our proxy via a VPN to access public cloud resources, no exceptions? I'm just glad I don't work in a company anymore and I don't have responsibilities. I think that is a much bigger discussion. Incidentally, I am creating a bunch of content related to this, and I recorded something very specifically related to this just yesterday, and that is going to start coming out in recent weeks. So stay tuned for that. That's going to help answer that question, which largely comes down to how do we control things like management of remote devices, which are now no longer in the organization because, of course, everyone's working from home. But we've got this problem of not just how do we secure the device itself, how do we inspect traffic, how do we recognize the fact that people go home to their families and the kids are around. And what happens also in environments where we're talking BYOD stuff, and it might be a family device, but then it's used for work purposes as well. So the series I've got coming out, which I'm doing in conjunction with an organization we all know and love, I'll talk more about that later on because it will partly address that. I personally went for Lifix as the idea of required hub was a pain, as Craig. Lifix is a very popular one as well. What else we got in here? Someone loves my plural site videos. Cool. Thank you. That's not a potlight, Scott. Now, TJJ says, if you get the IKEA app, Symphonics remote, battery-powered Zigbee, knob wheel, it could be mounted to the wall for dimming. I'm going to look at that. We're putting a lot of effort into making this house really nice. And to be honest, one of the things I do find is a lot of the IoT solutions for things that are mounted on the wall look very maker. They're not pretty. Now, I've got to actually check what these IKEA ones. Why don't I just Google this? IKEA Symphonics. I'm going to have to copy that because it looks like a Swedish word. Who knows? What do these actually look like? Symphonics? Oh, no, Symphonics looks like a broader range of different things. Sonos in-ceiling? No, it's not Sonos. I'll go and have a look at those later on. Look, I know there are different solutions. I know Lutron, for example, does a bunch of things like that as well. But, it's also – I kind of realize that we're talking about a place where we actually have rarely ever changed the dim on them as well. So in a way, I'm not too stressed about it. One of the problems also that the RGB LEDs I put in yesterday replaced existing LEDs. And one of the problems with LEDs is it's very hard to get them very, very dim. They just do not seem to dim like, say, halogens. We actually went through a bunch of drama trying to get ones inside our entertainment room. Internally, we've tried so many different lights, and the ones that get dim enough, you start to get to really high and expensive lights, like more than $100 a light instead of like $30 a light or whatever these ones are. So, yeah, I'm playing. I'll work out a solution one way or another. All right, I thought I'd talk a little bit about data breaches because I have been on a little bit of a data breach loading spree this week. And as I've said many times before, I always have a constant large backlog of breaches to load. And frankly, it usually comes down to, are there ones that are high priority? So, for example, they've just happened. They're just in the news. They include lots of people. They're for services that people are really interested in. And, of course, I have access to them. Or as often tends to be the case, these breaches are very old. Companies are disclosing at some time. More time goes by before they disclose and they make it my way that the time pressure is not the same. And then it's like, okay, when I get availability, because I'm a busy guy, I've got a lot of stuff to do, I'll load the data. And a lot of the stuff that I've just been loading really falls into that category. So if I go back and have a look at just the stuff that's gone in, when was the... What date was it a week ago? Because we rolled over a month. It was 29th. So just since then, Bonobos, that was one that was in the news quite a bit. Bonobos is a clothing store, so 2.8 million email addresses there. It had partial credit card data. Now, someone sent me an email yesterday where Bonobos had sent the disclosure notice, and just in case you're like me and you don't know what Bonobos was, at least until I got access to the data, Bonobos is a clothing store, a physical clothing store, and I believe they have an online presence as well. So they did send a disclosure notice to people. But the problem is, and I'm going to actually read from this person's email without disclosing who they are or throwing them proverbial under the bus, Bonobos, here we go. So this person got their disclosure notice from Bonobos. This one came through a couple of weeks ago. Hi, or actually it's dear name. We believe an unauthorized third party may have been able to view some of your account details. No shit, because someone sent them all to me, so plenty of other people got them too, including your contact information and encrypted password, not an encrypted password. The password was stored as a salted SHA-512 hash, which incidentally, without PBKDF2 is basically useless today, so don't do that. Your encrypted password was protected, so your actual password was not visible. I'll take that bet. Payment card information was not affected by this issue. Now, that's not really consistent with the reporting, and it's not really consistent with the data I've seen. So just to be clear, if I have a look at the story on Bleeping Computer here, and if we look for the word card, massive 70 gigabyte database leaked is the heading just here. The database also included various data far more interesting to threat actors, such as customers' addresses, phone numbers, partial credit card numbers, last four digits, order information, and password histories. So that is very important. Now, if I have a look down the images which are embedded here on the Bleeping Computer story, there is a screen cap that shows a bunch of different columns. There is a column for the card type, American Express, Master, Visa, etc. There is a column that has the last four digits. There is a column that has, I believe, expiry date. I saw the same data. I saw the same data that was sent to me. So all evidence at the moment suggests that there was partial card data. So when Bonobo says payment card information was not affected, is it A, bullshit, or B, is it one of these things where, like, if it's not the entire card in the CVV, well, then you don't have to say it was card data because it's not usable in that current form in order to make a transaction, which is a bad excuse because the last four digits are often used as a verification method anyway. So plus, of course, the ability to fish people by giving them a part of information which is correct and then eliciting further information from them. So I don't like the way that message is written. Now, this particular person here replied to them. Now, I'm not going to read what they said verbatim here, but he basically said, look, got a message from Have I Been Pwned. The description says that, in fact, here's the description I put in the Have I Been Pwned bit. I said, the breach also exposed partial credit card data, including card type, the name on the card, expiry date, and the last four digits of the card. And the bloke here has basically said, this contradicts your claim that payment data was not affected. Are they mistaken? They, of course, being me. I'm always a they. Bonobos replies, I believe they are mistaken. Well, I'm mistaken. Lawrence Abrams on Bleeping Computer's mistaken as well. The data's mistaken. I'd already sort of filed this away in cold storage, so it's a little bit of friction. It's not too bad. A little bit of friction to get the data back out and go through and analyze it. But I'd be a little bit tempted to pull this person's information and then go, is this your card data? The only thing is that very often in these breaches, it's not necessarily everyone's card data because some people pay with PayPal or something like that. And sometimes it's a subset. Some people probably had accounts but didn't put payment data in there. But that would have been an easy way to actually go, well, is this your data? But I really don't like that messaging from Bonobos. That does not feel that it is genuine at all. All right, so that was those guys. Next one here in the chronology of things that went up here, meet mindful. So if you would like to date someone who is as mindful as you are, you would sign up to Meet Mindful. 1.4 million addresses. This one was in the news very, very recently as well. Apparently, there are about 2.3 million users, but from memory, when I looked at the data, I think a whole bunch of people might have just had usernames in there and not email addresses. So I'm not sure what their mechanism of auth or credential retrieval was, credential reset. They couldn't remember it. Extensive personal info, including physical attributes, sexuality, substance use, and bcrypt password hashes. So substance use is things like, do you smoke, do you drink, do you do drugs, and what's your attitude towards all these things? Now, on the one hand, that is exceptionally personal data, and I understand why that would be very upsetting for people to have that appear in a data breach. On the other hand, it's a dating site. Like, it needs that information. If you were seeking a partner, questions about their sexuality are very, very relevant. Their age, or at least their age range, would be very, very relevant. Their religion, their political views. You're trying to find people that are like-minded. So the big issue I have with dating sites, the big concern I have with dating sites, is that in order for them to provide their service, they need to collect a huge amount of very, very personal information. But then we have this happen, or Ashley Madison happen, or Adult Friend Finder happen, or all of these other dating services. Muslim Match was another one that's in Have I Been Pwned. Obviously a very niche targeted audience there, but same sort of thing, a whole bunch of personal information. 86% of those people were already in Have I Been Pwned as well. So Yeah, sucks to be them. Pixlr had 1.9 million records. That was breached in October. Email addresses, social media profiles, the country they signed up from, SHA-512 password hashes. SHA-512 again. If ever anyone's interested in why SHA-512 is next to useless, if you do a little bit of searching, you'll find the stats on how fast you can calculate MD5, SHA-1, SHA-256, SHA-512, all the different variants. And you'll see that there's a very, very small difference between them. They're all sort of grouped at this end of the scale, and then you get to bcrypt with a half-decent work factor, and it's just like a gazillion miles away. So these examples are not really the way we want to store passwords at all. The next one here, in fact, the last one out of this list was Storybird. So they had 1 million unique email addresses exposed in 2015. I did have this one sitting there for quite a while, but it was such an old one. It was really questionable when I got around to time. PBKDF2, which is password paste, key derivation function, key stretching. This is a more modern way of storing credentials. It's certainly a much better approach to SHA-512. 76% of those already in Have I Been Pwned as well. And again, look, one thing that is making it easy for me with a lot of these is that these breaches are all in the news already and they're all disclosed and the companies have acknowledged them and I don't have to go through disclosure, which is just an absolute bloody nightmare doing that. All right, so that's data breaches. Now, next thing, I did actually push out another blog post this week. I have a lot of blog posts that have been sitting there, in some cases for years, partly completed. In fact, it's amazing to look back at some of these and think about the time that they were started, a very different life to today. But this one was just one of these sort of things where, like I have for many years, particularly the last decade, even before independent life, had a huge amount of my day spent meeting people online. Now, whether it be camera or just microphone or whatever it may be, but it's people in different parts of the world and having online meetings. And there's just a bunch of stuff that a lot of people seem to struggle to get right. And it's really, really fundamentally basic stuff, but it can really mess your day up if they get it wrong. And generally what happens with these blog posts that I draft over a long period of time is something will happen, it will piss me off. I'll drop a bit in the blog post, I'll go to bed and I'll forget about it. And then a few months later, something else will happen, it will piss me off. And I'm like, I got that blog post partway through. And that the catalyst for this one was a series of different meetings that were just really, really poorly managed and made my life hard. So it'd be things like, you know, I basically just look at my watch and I see what comes up next. I can literally click on here and go, okay, I see that I've got a Microsoft RD thing to do in 2 hours from now. Cool. So I know I'm good until then. And I will wait until a couple of minutes before the meeting and then I'll go, okay, open the calendar item, let's join the meeting. And I'd have meetings where people have invited me, but then there's nothing about the meeting in the calendar item. It's like, no contact details, no location, no here's the Zoom address or the Microsoft Teams or the WebEx or whatever. And then I'm there like right on the time ready to go and I don't have the information. And they buried it in another email somewhere. So I've got to go and sort of trawl through the email. And people might say, yes, but you should go and look for this 10 minutes beforehand. I'm doing this so often that I don't want to blow 10 minutes before every meeting just going through and trying to find information. So it's stuff like that. You would be amazed at how many people do not know how to send a calendar invite. It's like, look, if you want to meet, send me something where it's got the little buttons on Outlook and it will say accept or decline or propose new time. Because if I accept that, it'll go into my calendar and it will appear on my watch. And if it's on my watch, then I can actually do the meeting and I won't miss it. So that is very, very important to me. So there's that bit just there. Now, I also want to make sure that people get their time zones right. So people are just, I'm going to generalize here, they're absolutely shit at understanding time zones. Now, part of the reason is because time zones can be confusing. So we're in a state here that doesn't have daylight saving because it confuses the cows. But if you go 30 kilometers that way, you get to New South Wales and they do have daylight saving. And these states are on top of each other. And that state has Sydney. And to a lot of people, Australia is Sydney. And they don't realize that Australia is basically the same size as the US or continental Europe. So we've actually got lots and lots of time zones. And as you go west, you go through time zones that aren't actually offset by an hour. In fact, the next state across is offset by half an hour. They're half an hour behind. The state beneath them is the same. Then you come back the other way, and now you've got to go an hour and a half ahead during daylight savings. So the whole thing gets really kind of messy. And these assumptions that are made about things like time zones and offsets, et cetera, again, piss me off, and they make their way into a blog post. So that was that's what I wanted to put in there. And it might be one of those things I send some people sometimes when they send me a meeting that just doesn't have the right stuff in there. I have had a bunch of useful comments in here as well. A lot of people saying, look, they only want to go to meetings where there's an agenda that's been set. I totally understand that. We've probably all been in the corporate meetings where you just end up with a whole bunch of people burning time. Doesn't worry me quite as much here, because a lot of my meetings are things like a podcast. So someone wants to do a podcast, it's like, cool, I'm just going to turn up. And in fact, I consciously say, please don't tell me what we're going to talk about, because I like to ad lib it. I just find it more organic. Or it'll be reporters and they want to talk about a topic. And it's like, okay, you don't have to tell me all the details. I'll just turn up and answer questions. So I'm quite okay with that, but I understand why a lot of people here would like everything to be prescribed a little bit more. Okay, so look, I think that's about it. If anyone has any other questions, please drop them in the chat. I noticed just a comment here around IKEA. It's mainly for IKEA. So TJJ, we're talking about those IKEA Symphonics. It's mainly for the IKEA Sonos compatible speakers, but since they're Zigbee, and IKEA even showcases them for dimming any Zigbee lights in the store, they can be used, which is interesting. Good fact to know. I've got to have a look at a few more options for the dimming, and I've really got to find some better LED lights that go a lot dimmer as well. But it is a money pit. Now the thing is, this is not the money pit, right? Like these are cheap. I don't forget how much these work out at. The time of the electrician to install them is more of the money pit. That costs more than the device itself. But again, Australia, we don't have a choice if you want to keep your insurance and not get electrocuted and things like that. Jim Browning says, do you ever go after scammers? So my most popular YouTube video ever, in fact, I will drop this into the chat here, and as we wrap up, people might want to go and watch this because it's good fun. I did... Scamming the scammers. This, I think, was about 2012. It's a very long time ago. And I was getting calls from scammers, here we go, 8 years ago, 1.1 million something views. I'll drop that into the chat window just here. I was getting calls from scammers doing the Your PC Has Viruses things. So let me explain what this was in a nutshell. And then if you want to watch the entire 1 hour and 22 minute video, you know, feel free to do that as well. But you'd get a call, and I'm sure everyone experiences this, where there's a call come in and it's like you answer it on your phone, it's a number you don't recognize or it's a number withheld, and then there's a long pause, and then there's obviously a VoIP connection and someone usually from the subcontinent who pops on the line and says that they're from, in this case, from Microsoft. They were faking it, you know, we're from Microsoft. And what they're trying to do is convince you, or convince, fortunately not me, probably not you either, but their victims, that your computer has viruses. And the way they do this is they say, okay, hold down the Windows key, press R, type EVENTVWR, which opens the event viewer, scroll down through the logs, and then you'll see errors, which is normal in a system. Those are viruses, and they're socially engineering people by trying to create trust in the scammer by showing the people something which they think is the viruses, but of course they're not actually viruses. So then, of course, the victim's like, oh, no, viruses. And the scammer goes, okay, no problems. We're going to fix this for you. It's free. We're from Microsoft. Trust us. Or sometimes it's like the Windows security team or some word like that. And they then send you a link or get you to go to an address to open up a remote desktop session using software such as TeamViewer. And then they've now got remote on your machine. They go through, they delete a bunch of crap. They run things like the cleanup wizard. I think in this particular example, they installed CC Cleaner or something like that. And then they ask for money. And this is after we've gone through the process of establishing that this is free. So look, it's worthwhile watching the video. It's obviously this one's been popular. There are other people out there that have done great stuff with scammers as well. So there's some fun videos out there. I did a bunch of other ones as well where people were trying to get me to buy them porn after they figured out that I was maybe not going to give them money. I get a lot now. I guess they're not scams per se, but they're spam. where I get calls trying to sell me services for building websites, and they've just gone through historical Whois records. And the one that's always the most funny is I own the domain troyhuntsucks.com. Now you can go to troyhuntsucks.com and see that I don't suck. But anyway, I own that domain. So I continually get these calls. I had another one just last week where spammers will try to sell me services. And every time they say Troy Hunt sucks, I tell them I'm really offended and why they're talking to me that way. And we just go round and round and round in circles, and they try to talk their way out of it. And I normally do it when I've got, like, I'm in the car with the kids as well, and we all have a good laugh. So anyway, yes, I have had some experiences with them. So check that one out. What are the other comments here? Thiefmaster, you don't have the option in Australia to DIY and just hire the electrician to sign off on what you did. No, you don't. Australia is actually a pretty heavily regulated country, and that's everything from electrical things around the house through to road rules through to medicines. I can't say that I disagree with it when it comes to plugging 240 volts into a device like this, because the ramifications either for yourself getting electrocuted or setting the place on fire, it's just a space where it's like, look, I'm willing to wear that cost. Theoretically, you shouldn't even change a plug. Now, when I say change a plug, I lived overseas a lot, particularly as a kid, and I remember going from country to country, like you'd cut off the European plug and then you'd buy you'd buy, say, a British plug when we were living in Singapore, and you'd just screw the sucker back onto the wires and that's it. And I never electrocuted myself once or burned down the house. So stuff like that, you're not meant to do here. Let's just say I could forgive people for doing it. But when it's things that get embedded in behind a wall and there are live wires in the house, you know, I think that's reasonable. Okay, what else we got in the comments in here? As long as I made the point, Shelley's also have a variant that has power metering, which is nice if you'd like to keep an eye on power usage as well. That's true. I do have a bunch of external plugs which just plug literally into the socket, and then you plug your kettle or whatever into the plug that do power monitoring. I've got the TP-Link ones, so they can do power monitoring as well as be turned on and off remotely. Someone listening to this might be able to help me. Someone sent me something a week or so ago, and I followed up and never got a reply from them, which was power monitoring that actually goes into the mains at the switchboard in the house. It was IoT enabled. I believe it had integrations in the Home Assistant as well, so you could monitor the entire power usage of the house. I would like to find that thing because I think that would be interesting. And particularly here, we run the air conditioning a lot. In summer, we try and turn it off during the day and just open the windows, but at night you got to run the air conditioning. So I'd really like to sort of track how much it uses. Plus, I've got a lot of screens here and a rack with a lot of PC equipment or network equipment in it. So I think it'd be pretty cool to be able to monitor that. So if you know of a device approved for Australia, that's the big catch. These are approved for Australia. That can monitor at the site-wide location or the site-wide scope. I'd really like to know about that as well. Comments in here. Solution for light dimming issues, maybe use high and low lumen lights, turn off the high lumen and turn on the low lumen. The thing is, like all of these lights, say the down lights that I'm getting from the store I buy them from in Australia is called Oz Smart Things. And incidentally, if you're an Aussie in Australia, Oz Smart Things have been fantastic. They always ship stuff. Usually arrives here within about 48 hours of ordering it. So it's not like it's being shipped from China, which is where a lot of my Zigbee-based Akera stuff comes from, and you're just waiting weeks for things to arrive. The pricing's actually really good. And in fact, just to put that in context, how much were those Shelleys? And I've had a bit of a chat to the guy that runs it. Super nice, really, really helpful. So if we go and have a look at Shelley's. So the Shelley PM, which is not these ones because they're more expensive. Let's just search for Shelley. If you buy them in bulk, it always helps. So just a Shelley one is 23 Aussie dollars. If you want to convert that back to, say, US dollars, take off probably around 20% of that. Our Aussie dollar, unfortunately, has strengthened a little bit. You can get 10 of them with two free for $229. So now you're getting 12 there. So you're getting down under 20 bucks, around 20 bucks Aus a unit each, which isn't too bad. So check out Aus Smart Things. They've been great. I do want to make sure that, just to go back to this point about dimming, I mean, we have native dimming capabilities within things like those downlights. You know, you can choose how bright you want them to be. So that, I guess, that the trick there and what I want to achieve is I want to make sure that I'm using that feature. So I need something that can send digital commands to the light. And again, as the comment here, mounting and looks might not be so nice though. And this is the challenge, right? Because this is becoming a very, very nice looking house. And I really want to keep that nice theme. I was just speaking to my mate, Lars Klint, who some of you know, earlier today, and we're talking about IoT and this sort of thing. And he's got a lot of retro style light switches in an older part of the house, I guess. And he said, you know, look, he wants to keep that aesthetic. And you're just not going to get that aesthetic from a modern digital unit. So you're going to have to control it, you know, probably via your phone instead. All right, Benjamin, I have one, which I assume you mean is the energy monitoring that I was talking about at the switch level, Sense Energy Monitor from Amazon. So, Benjamin, I'm interested if you are in Australia, because that does tend to make a difference. Sense Energy Monitor, track electricity usage in real time. This probably wasn't the one I was thinking of, but I imagine that there are multiple products that do very similar things. So I'll have a proper look at that after I wrap this up. Should be good. Rambling Geek, did you get anything more from Ubiquity? Now, I assume when you say, did I get anything more from Ubiquity, you're not talking about, did I get more networking equipment? You're talking about, did I get an explanation for their data breach? Easy answer, no. And I'm disappointed that I didn't get an explanation. I've been thinking I need to reach back out to my contact there. If I was to hazard a guess, because the communication has always been really good, if I was to hazard a guess, I would say lawyers and PR people made it very difficult for people there to give me some candid feedback, which is shitty. It's not unusual. It happens a lot with this sort of thing. But yeah, I think that was poorly handled. I've said that many times before. I love their networking equipment, but they've got to do a better job at communicating incidents like this, because they're a big online asset. A lot of people are dependent on them. It probably won't be the last time this happens. Most big entities have incidents of one style or another just because the footprint is so large and they have so many moving parts out there. So yeah, no, unfortunately, I didn't get a reply from them. What else is in here? So someone says, haven't had dimming in forever, and truth be told, I'll never miss it. When I think about how often I actually change dimming, it seems to be very little. Like, I've got a bunch of dimmers, but I tend to sort of get them where I want them to be, and it's not often I really change it very much. Maybe in the living room, where you sort of go from, I guess sitting around playing a game with the kids or something, you want good visibility, to, you know, sitting around a little bit later at night having a glass of wine and you just want it to be a bit cozier. But yeah, for the most part, I really don't change dimming very much. I agree with that. I saw Yeelight Wireless Smart Dimmer. It's not the weirdest looking dimmer. Isn't it funny when, like, this is the way I have to rate it? It's like, it's not terrible. So I might have a look at that one as well. Tiny says, other than the garage door, what's the best use of Shelley's for you? Let me take a step back for a second, because I've had some criticism. So I posted a photo of just like all of this stuff dumped on the floor yesterday or the day before on Twitter. And multiple people came back and went, you know, like, this is pointless and stupid, and why would you do this? And, you know, it adds nothing to your life. I don't think those people are very fun, number one. They don't seem like very fun people at all. And number two, where this is actually becoming really, really nice now is is the fact that the IoT components, and maybe it's as we get used to them and as I tweak them as well, are becoming a seamless part of our lives. Now, a good example of this is that the kids really, really love the colored lights. Like when they have friends come around, they're like, let me close the curtains and I'll show you my lights. And they talk to Alexa and they change the lights and everything and they love it. And then what was cool is I sat with both my son and my daughter in their beds with my laptop, with Visual Studio Code, editing YAML with them, tailoring their lights to the way they want them. So we've just created scenes, like we created a bedtime scene. And in each of their rooms, there's probably a dozen different things we can tailor in terms of, is it on, is it off, what color is it? And we've been able to sit there in bed and with code change the way their room looks. And I think that's really, really cool. And I love the fact that they can sit there and go, well, you can do this with code. This is really, really cool. So that was fun. Last night, Charlotte and I were changing some of the colors in the house. And I was literally sitting down on my jetty with my laptop. And we're sitting down there just programming in. Okay, it's YAML. Let's just call it programming. Programming in what we want the lights to look like. So there is a geek factor there. What's becoming really neat now is making it a very seamless, integrated part of our lives. So things like that the TV has a very nice backlight around it, which is a Philips Hue. Now, this was one of the ones that wasn't connected a lot of the time because it didn't have good connectivity to the hub. But because the TV has got a power monitoring plug on it, when I turn the TV on, that Philips Hue light just comes on very subtly. And you barely even notice it. I notice it when it's not there. And then when you turn the TV off, the light goes away. Which is great. The general lighting that we trigger of an evening is really nice too. So I think I've said at the moment about half an hour before sunset, turn on evening mode, and the lights come on in the pool, and they come on in the garden, and they come on in the house, and you barely even notice it. But it just feels nice. It feels occupied. And when we're going to bed, there's one little switch. I press that one little switch, everything goes off. Motion sensors on the stairs, so that the stairs have got one of these behind them. Our stairs go over sort of a top and a bottom and a landing in the middle, and I've got motion sensors at each point. So when you walk out at night, the lights come on. You're not continually flicking switches. And they're just lots of little things like that. There are definitely things which are more geek factor than value. I have the Sonos telling us every time the garage door opens. I think Charlotte gets a bit fed up with that sometimes. But yesterday was a really good example. We hit sunset and the Sonos speaks and says the sun has set and the garage door is still open. Now, we had forgotten that we left the garage door open. Yeah, that's just one of those little things, which is just a really, really nice value add. And I just like the fact that this all just incrementally grows and grows and grows. I have an irrigation system, which I just realized has an integration for Home Assistant. So now I can get visibility as to whether or not the irrigation is running without actually having to walk out and try and see it, because it's all sort of under the soil kind of stuff. Now I can trigger that based on other events as well, because we've got feeds from the weather and that sort of thing. So it's just like loads and loads and loads of little things that, number one, I just have fun doing, and number two, do make your life better in those little tangible ways. When I was speaking to Lars just before, he said one of the things he's done is he's got a light in his server cabinet, and if the temperature goes above a certain level, the light goes red. So, okay, that's cool. Like, that's a visually identifiable pattern straight away. So I'm just having fun with it. But even if you put all the geeky stuff aside, people using the house who are not as geeky as me are just enjoying it as well, which is nice. All right, other comments? That's a long answer. So Sonia says, I'm kind of amazed that a Shelly plug, et cetera, has a built-in web server. And this is fascinating. We'll talk about the other implications of this as well. So let's pop this thing out of the box again. Like, there is a web server in here. And again, it's like, oh shit, I dropped it. It's so small, it does actually disappear inside the hand. There's a web server in here. It is addressable over HTTP. I can go to the IP address and I can configure stuff. And that, like, what an amazing time, right? They have a web server in this tiny, tiny little device here. So that's fantastic. Someone did actually say earlier on, well, you know, wouldn't it be better to be using Zigbee-based devices and not having to communicate over HTTP and maybe just pushing over message queue or something instead. I mean, by having a web server in it, it then exposes a whole bunch of other functionalities, such as the ability to go and check independently for firmware and things like that. I need to give a little bit more thought as to how I feel about that versus other options, but I will say that Shelly has got a massive cornering of the market with these devices. Sonoff has got similar things, but Shelly just seems to be, it feels like they've really hit that sweet spot of our type of people, assuming you're like me, where they've come out and they've gone, yep, we're going to integrate with HA, and we've got all of these, you know, all of these different points at which you can tie the thing in to be open and accessible from the outset. So I'm massively happy with the Shelly stuff. I cannot fault that at all. Dimming and temperature transform spaces from sterile and productive to warm blanket. Yeah, there's a really good comment, actually. I'm going to read that again. Dimming and temperature transform spaces from sterile and productive to a warm blanket. And it's very true. Like, color and brightness, yeah, really do make the environment. Temperature, of course, is the other one. I literally just had air conditioning people here today because their air conditioner decided to start leaking a lot of water. And I was talking to them. I've got a Daikon system which went into this place, we believe, about 13 years ago, so well before the whole IoT excitement. And I really want to get a Daikon, a new panel which is IoT compatible. I still want to keep all the existing air conditioning stuff because it's bloody expensive. But a new panel, there is a Daikon integration for Home Assistant, and I want to be able to do things like all the different thermometers and stuff I've got around the place, to be able to do stuff like say, hey, look, the bedroom, for example, is now down to, let's say, for argument's sake, 20 degrees Celsius. We don't need the aircon in there anymore. Let's turn that off. And equally, this room here in particular, because the sun sets over there, it's often over 30 degrees Celsius in here. I want to be able to cool this place down if I know I'm going to be coming home in the afternoon and I want to be able to get some work done. But again, when you have the hub that is Home Assistant and you've got all of these different triggers and then you've got all of these different things that you can turn on as a result of activity on those triggers, you start to have a lot of options. Another comment here, also RGB can replace painting. Now, I saw a video and I'll see if I can share this one. I got nothing else to do. Actually, I got a lot to do today, but for the most part, nothing else. I saw a video on a bunch of new stuff that came out of CES yesterday. So CES is still happening even during COVID times. So one of the home automation channels I follow shared a bunch of CES stuff, and apparently Lifex is doing things like external lights, which are just made to shine up on the wall. And in fact, I was thinking when I was at the back of my house last night doing my YAML that it would be kind of cool to have these lights that just shine up on the wall. And a little bit like you can see the wall behind me has got a bit of color on it. It really does liven things up and set a really nice mood. And it can look tacky, don't get me wrong, but there is a sweet spot in there for everyone where it appeals just to their senses. So I think stuff like that is actually really, really nice for creating mood. And I totally agree with that comment there. TJJ sent me a DM on Twitter. Thanks, mate. I will check that out later on. On RGB light, I kind of really want ambient monitor lighting on the wall behind the main display that extends the light color without CPU load. So this is something which has become popular around TVs, where there is the ability to take what is on the screen and then not mirror that onto the wall, but to pick the colors and the highlights and reflect that onto the wall. So if it's really green on this side, the wall behind will look really green. If it's really red on that side, the wall will look really red. But a lot of it seems to depend on running software on the machine in order to pick up what's being broadcast to each one, and then it talks to usually some proprietary implementation. I believe Philips does have one of these within Hue, and it broadcasts that. I've always thought it'd be really nice to be able to have like an HDMI pass-through or something like that, where it just goes into a box. The box is like, okay, now I know what's being broadcast, and then it can communicate to other devices and chuck it up on the wall. So if anyone knows of something like that, do let me know. What else is here? We've got a lot of comments on this one. Find yourself constantly checking how you'll feel if it was all unavailable. Yeah, so there's a good comment from Sam here. Like, what if the whole thing was unavailable? I did have a little bit of internet outage recently, and it was interesting how much shit didn't work anymore. And part of the value proposition of Home Assistant is that you can be self-contained. You don't have to be dependent on cloud services. But things like if my phone hasn't reconnected to my Wi-Fi network, and I'm asking the lady, whose name I can't say at the moment, on my watch to open the garage door, then it's just not going to open. And I will often go out with, without getting into too much detail, keys which are not going to get me all the way into the house unless I jump over the fence, or I can remotely open the garage door. So stuff is a little bit dependent there. Someone made a comment, I think, on Twitter. They said, if you sell your house and you take your router with you, and now every single Shelly and every wall and every single light needs a different SSID, what are you going to do? Well, first of all, that's not going to be my problem. That's the first thing. Second of all, I think I would have to sort of do the ROI on this and go, for the sake of like $20 units and the fact that I need an electrician, do I get them to come over and remove them from every wall, or do I just put them back into the mode which effectively just makes the switch work like a normal switch, and one day someone's going to just pop a plate off the wall and go, oh, what the hell is this sitting behind it? But I mean, I can put the house back into normal mode if I had to sell it. But yeah, like we're becoming dependent, but if it doesn't work, life kind of still goes on. I think that the hesitation I'm having now is when those Shellys are in a detached switch mode. If they're in a detached switch mode, and let's say Home Assistant dies, there's going to be some lights that I'm not going to be able to turn on. The ones where it's in like an edge switch, that's going to be fine. Rambling Geek is asking, Shelly, have a Shelly dimmer? So not a physical dimmer that you would put your hand on in a UX fashion, but one that sits behind the wall. Yes, they do. Tony Yates, have you seen Tesla, mate? Gives you insane visibility. As a car lover, I'm not a massive Tesla fan. I have one as a geek. So I started looking at cars again the other day. This is going to get out another rabbit hole. So we're planning to get a dog, and I'll talk more about the dog later on. And I'm not going to put the dog in my GTR. That doesn't sound like a dog car. And I'm really reluctant to put it in the E63. It's going to be a large-ish dog. And it is a sedan, and it's just not going to play nice. And for the most part, we're going to just be walking around here anyway. But, yeah, I occasionally want to go to the dog beach or stuff like that. So I started looking at other cars, and I even thought about Tesla, but I've got a whole bunch of issues with the Model X, which I think I'm going to have to save that for another podcast, because we will go down a rabbit hole. The thing, though, without delving into too much, which is really, really nice, I can never remember which way around the letters go, the Audi RSQ8. So have a look at that. If you want to talk cars, Audi RSQ8, very, very sweet. Just about impossible to get at the moment, but... that very, very nice thing. Okay. Someone else is here in the comments. Justin says, hey, Google, turn off the lights, and having all the lights in the house turn off has been a game changer. Yeah, yep, I get that. Also have a speaker in my garage, and I can just yell at my house to open the garage with a pin code, which is instantly, do you yell the pin code? Because that would be interesting. Having the watch, And I've got to make better use of this. I have not tied near as much stuff into Home Assistant as what I should. But even with the kids, like the kids have got Apple Watches, so they should be able to talk into the watch to decide which color they want to make their room. That the trick there is you end up not only having stuff in Home Assistant, but then you've got to make sure that you have the right rooms defined in HomeKit. I think I used the wrong word earlier on. And then because they've got an Echo on their desks, if they want to talk to the Echo, then you've got to make sure you have the right things defined in the Amazon ecosystem. Like all of this flows from Home Assistant, but you've still got to set up things like the rooms, for example. So there's a little bit of tweaking to go on there. What else we got in here? Now Scott says, when both of our phones leave the house, all the lights turn off. That's super handy. You know, mate, one thing that I was thinking just this week is I really need to look at the device tracking, because I've set it up and then really never paid attention to it again. So I might even ping you later on that one. We can have a chat about how you're doing it. The lights in my kid's room turn off at 2300 too, so if he forgets, they don't stay on all night. So, and I think the nice thing about this is that everyone gets to decide what is their normal. So My son likes having some of his lights on at night. My daughter likes just having one light on at night. So we've just gone through and defined scenes. So like, okay, what's your bedtime scene? And we create the bedtime scene, and then when they go to bed, they just ask Alexa, and the scene gets turned on. But again, like if your thing is, I want to turn stuff off at a certain time of night regardless, then you can do that. One of the reasons I bought so many Shelly's is one thing that bugs the hell out of me with these kids. I mean, they're great, other than this thing, which is they're constantly leaving the light on in their cupboard, and each of their rooms has its own bathroom, and they're constantly leaving a light on in the bathroom, and they're constantly leaving the fan on the bathroom. And they'll be at school, and I'll walk in, and I'm like, why can't you just turn stuff off? So I will put Shelly's, three in each room, behind each one of those things. And then I'll figure out what are the circumstances in which I'm going to turn this stuff off. So each of them have got a motion sensor in the room. So maybe, for example, if there's been no motion in the room for 15 minutes, it's probably pretty safe to say, let's turn off the light. Maybe I'll even just put another motion sensor in the bathroom. And it's like, look, if you've been out of the bathroom, how long does a fan need to do its job? You know, whatever it may be, then there's no motion for half an hour or something, I'll just turn it off. So it's little stuff like that. That's going to save a bit of my sanity there. Teddy Day says the Hue Sync Box is the one that does the syncing of the screen to the light. That does ring a bell. James is pretty sure the Hue version of the HDMI pass-through. Problem is it doesn't help for TV content. It starts and ends in TV, e.g. Netflix via the built-in TV app. It does feel a little bit like, is this going to be unnecessary complication? And then, of course, you've got to have the external lights as well. Everything is LED these days, but definitely our heat is integrated and we let it get real cold at night since we are under the blankets anyways. Now, I'm not sure if when you say, Justin, you let it get real cold, are you somewhere in the world where that means you do nothing, or you're somewhere in the world like here, which means you have to blast the aircon? But again, like you have the choice if it's automated because everything is controllable by code. And that just, it just feels like a really nice concept, isn't it? Like everything is controllable by code. So that's pretty cool. Scott, are you talking to me? Wait, do you not have HA outside of your home? Yeah, I mean, via Nabucasa, if that's what you mean. So someone here says, Troy Hunt, selling a house with IoT setup would increase the house value, I'd guess. I think if I was selling this house and I had to explain what was involved in making the IoT work, I think it would devalue the house. If I was going to do that, I think I would say nothing. It'd be a little bit different if you had one of those smart home systems where everything is on the wall and it's very, very user-friendly and don't have to understand all the mechanics of how it works. And, of course, you could do that with Home Assistant. One of the things I want to do is get an iPad mounted to a wall somewhere and surface all the automation stuff there. But the way it is at the moment, can you imagine someone bought this house, they're not technical, they move in, and one day something doesn't work. Who do you call? Not me. It's like, man, I'm no responsibility after I sell the place if that ever happens. And TJJ sort of said this, the buyer will probably not know Home Assistant or how to maintain it. Maybe they just want the house to just work. And that is what my expectation would be as well. Oh, wow. Home Assistant and home automation in general always gets a lot of engagement on these videos. FYI, Testimate is an app you run in Docker. It harvests your data from car API to get insights that are pumped into Grafana. I'm not sure that I want all my driving insights pumped into anywhere, if I'm honest, but that's another story. Scott said, you said your watch needed to be on Wi-Fi though. Yeah, so sorry, just to clarify, mate, what I was talking about there, so Scott's like, hang on, you can't access Home Assistant from external. I can, and I do use the watch when I'm out to open the door, so that the garage door. And I've discussed before that as Scott knows, my garage door doesn't actually get you into the house. It just gets you into like literally a walled garden. But this was a discussion about what if, for example, Home Assistant was down. I'll rephrase it. What if the internet was down? So if the internet's down, my watch isn't going to work when it's out of Wi-Fi range. But if Home Assistant's totally self-contained, then so long as I'm on the network here, then I can do stuff like the door. So yeah, I do have remote access to it. Justin says, I don't give a damn what my bathroom humidity is at any given time. Look, I mean, to a degree, I don't give a damn about a bunch of the stuff that this measures either. But But there are always these little use cases. So like I mentioned the my air conditioning stopped working the other day. In fact, it didn't stop working. It was just leaking a lot. Now, we've got sort of two separate zones for air conditioning, two totally separate units. So I had to turn off the one in the bedroom. And we did that. We thought, oh, we'll open the windows because we're on a high floor anyway, and it'll be fine. And it got way, way too hot. So the next night, we just turned on the air conditioning downstairs, blasted it, left all the doors open with the hope that somehow the cold air would defy physics and go up or maybe cool some of the other air above it. But that seemed to work okay. And then I just went to Home Assistant, put up all the graphs, and it's like, yeah, like we can actually see the temperature now and how it changed over time, and that helps us figure out what temperature to set the aircon on downstairs and so on and so forth. So there's a bunch of data there, which for the most part is kind of useless, but you do find interesting use cases for as well. On life, the universe, and everything, everything is controlled by code. Yeah, okay, you quote me on that. It's pretty much right. TJ says, at least for me, a centralized and proprietary would very much devalue a house. You might need to replace every switch and light if you don't want to stay on the system. Yeah, so thinking about it on the fly, here's what I'd do. If I wanted to sell this house now and I didn't want to have any smartness to it at all, I'd open up the app, I'd go through every Shelly, I'd put the Shelly back into the mode where the light switch just works like a normal light switch. I would go to every RGB downlight and I would make it look as much like a normal LED downlight as possible, so the normal kind of white-yellow glow. And frankly, that'd be it. And then the only artifact that would be left is the little motion sensor stuck on the walls and the little temperature sensor stuck on the walls. Now, the only issue I've got with those is they're on with double-sided tape, and removing them does tend to take a bit of paint off. So I think I'd have to figure out how to carefully remove them without the paint, and then that would be it. So I can put the house back into very normal mode, probably in less than a day, I would say. Have you seen the Home Assistant episode of Black Mirror on Netflix? No, I wonder, this is from Strata Strong, is that actually Home Assistant that appears in Black Mirror? That would be interesting. I have watched a couple of Black Mirror episodes and they were kind of freaky. I hate to say this, when using a humidity sensor to not turn off the lights when someone is showering. I still want the motion sensor. Well, you know, there's a good idea, because we could use the humidity sensor, which is built into those little, I don't have one here handy because they're all stuck to the wall, but they're built into little temp sensors. Could use it in the bathroom such that when the humidity reaches a certain point, turn the fan on. When it gets below a certain point, turn it off. That's a really good idea. I think I've got some spare ones lying around. That might be my afternoon that goes there, except I've got to get the electrician to come and put the Shellys on the fan for reasons we've already discussed. Tony, I enjoyed your PC upgrade. Do you run everything of the beast, or have a rack full of servers? I have the cloud. So I don't have any servers running in the house. Everything that's in the network cabinet is effectively networking gear. It's switches. It's the unified dream machine and the NVR for all the video stuff. All of the servers I use are cloud-based servers. So I do pretty much everything on this machine. I have my laptop sitting under the pile of Shellys that's over here, and between the PC and the laptop, and then I've got an iPad and iPhone, which I use mostly for consuming information. That does everything. So I do not feel the need to have a server here. TDA says, new houses that are built with a smart home in mind often don't run mains power to switches. Okay, interesting. And then I think TDA, you and Justin can continue your discussion if you'd like, but I'm well over an hour now. I hope you've enjoyed this. I really do appreciate everyone chiming in on the IoT stuff as well, because I always learn something new and something different. And I'll go and check that DM I got sent earlier on, and I'm going to think about the humidity sensor in the bathroom to turn on the fan. I think that's a fantastic idea, and that might also be one input that goes into when I turn the fan off in the kids' bathroom. Now, if you can come up with a sensor that can detect smell as well, that would be awesome. Then I'd have everything that I need. But until then, it's probably going to be humidity and motion as well. So thanks for tuning in on this one. Hope you enjoyed it. I will do this again next week, and I will do it later in my day, which will then be probably about 7 or 8 hours after this time. So we pick up the other corner of the world. Thanks, folks. See you later.